The following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you the Saturday night edition of Sports Whispers Weekly. Lou, I apologize. I wish I had written down your number last week so that I could contact you before Thursday's show, because
I couldn't do it anyway, Steve, because I was committed to another show for Thursday anyway, so it wouldn't have mattered.
Oh, okay. Because we actually normally, as you know, we do the Survivor or Big Brother Memories podcast usually on Thursday. However, we made a different choice this week because it was NFL draft. We decided to do live commentary and analysis over the first round of the NFL draft this week.
Right. But normally on Thursdays, I'm committed to another podcast. I'm co-host with two other guys, so I had to attend to that anyway.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, when you get the chance, though, you know, you should listen to Thursday's show, because there was quite the discussion that I had with Jim and Evan. As we broke down pretty much each pick as it, you know, as they came in. Yeah, it was actually a very intense night, you know.
How long were you on for?
Boy, we were on for about 4 hours, but it cuts us off at around on the recording. Let me double check, actually. Let me see how much actually recorded. Because usually after the third hour, it only records for a certain extra amount, like an extra 15 minutes, and then it cuts off, even if you're still on the line.
Right.
The recording, it only lasted about 15 minutes extra. So
I see.
Basically, probably anybody that was that's listening to the extra or to the archives, they're probably going to miss, I think, anywhere from, I think probably right after the Steelers pick, because I know it took about 45 minutes for them to even finish the final picks.
We started at 8 o'clock and we started before even the first pick started, because they were doing their pre-show with everything, with the concert and whatnot, and commercials, and waiting for the first boo from Roger Goodell. Oh boy. So, you know, we started our broadcast before the first pick got started, and we went straight through until it ended about just after midnight. And, oh, boy, you want to talk about being to the point of exhaustion? We were exhausted.
Yeah, we did. So we did sort of the same thing where we started off at 8 o'clock instead of 9 because we thought that, of course, we were gonna get started immediately. We weren't anticipating all these stupid little musical performances that took up a majority of the opening to the
first
show, and plus Roger Goodell showing off his little chair, having the fans, a fan from each team,
that's
get
Goodell
to sit
for
in
you.
It. Yeah, it's talk about a fucking brown noser. Speaking of brown nosers, actually, the Rams. I don't know if you saw this when they showed their war room. I think it was yesterday, maybe. When they showed their war room, they had a painting of Roger Goodell. No joke.
Why don't I just throw a dart to this picture?
It was ridiculous. But
yeah.
looking at the whole entire draft as a whole, you know. There were quite a few surprises, I think, in the first round.
In the top 10.
Yeah, exactly. With the top 10, I mean, it was pretty obvious, you know, Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson were going 1 and 2. That was pretty much a lock. Number three, though, you know, the San Francisco 49ers,
they
– everybody was thinking that it was going to be Mac Jones, you know.
Yes.
Everybody. And all of a sudden, San Francisco decided to go with Trey Lance. And I said this on the show right before the pick was revealed. I said, you know, there's two things that's going to happen with this. Either A, if it's Mac Jones, Jimmy Garoppolo's gone. If it's Trey Lance or Justin Fields, then maybe Garoppolo will stay, and they'll do basically the Patrick Mahomes, Alex Smith routine. And
right,
you know, I definitely wasn't expecting Trey Lance, but you know, when they drafted Trey Lance, I was like, well, you know, that kind of explains now why the demand for Garoppolo was such a high draft pick, because they were asking at least a first or a second for Garoppolo. So the fact that they weren't able to get that at all, and there were a whole bunch of rumors like, oh, the Patriots are engaging in contract talks with Garoppolo to try and either restructure his deal or to give him a longer deal.
Yes.
There was a whole bunch of stuff that was going around, and the more that I thought of it, the more I thought maybe this whole entire thing is a complete smokescreen, because why San Francisco trades up like they did? I literally thought it was going to be for somebody that was NFL ready, like a Mac Jones. I was not expecting Trey Lance.
Yeah.
What did you think, Lou, of the 49ers' choice to decide to go with the project as opposed to somebody that was fully NFL ready?
Well, I mean, you know, it's not surprising that there's always going to be something that throws us in a whammy, and this was theirs. So most of the picks did went as I thought it was going to go, but that number three pick, you know, that did I think catch us off guard, and caught me off guard a little bit.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The,
and you know,
so
they,
their second pick moved up to the top 15, so like that was a bit of a surprise. The second pick.
Yeah, it was a surprise, but it was a terrific move by them, though, to pick Elijah Vera Tucker out of USC. If there was one of the things that was known about the Jets is they had one of the worst pass protections of all the teams last year.
No,
and,
really.
Yeah, and if you're bringing in a new quarterback like Zach Wilson, you're going to want to surround him with as much protection as possible. Something that apparently you know, the Bengals still can't seem to understand. And with them trading up like they did, I knew it had to be a lineman, because either a lineman or a receiver. But the way I thought of it, I'm like, well, you know, Smith and Waddle are already gone, so. Even though it's a deep receiver draft, you know, the next receiver wasn't really expected to be taken until after 20. The Giants, I thought that was a bit of a reach, taking Kadarius Toney at number 20.
Yes.
Because I kind of thought that he was one of the receivers that was going to slip into the second round. I was not expecting him at all to go as high as 20 as he did. But with the Jets taking Elijah Vera Tucker, I think it did two things. Number one, it reinforced the fact that this Jets team under Robert Saleh is going to be completely different in terms of how things are run. Because I guarantee you, you wouldn't have seen this same thing happen if Adam Gase was still the coach.
No, that is going to be Elijah Sucker, not Tucker.
And number two, this told me that Belichick wanted Tucker, because Tucker was his number one guard on his list. And when Tucker went, that based hand, I think, and unless they were going to go with Mac Jones the entire time at number 15, because, you know, everybody was expecting the Patriots to move up. And surprisingly, there was a report that came out that said a team in the top 10 put out an offer to the Patriots before they made their official pick in the top 10. That team put out an offer to the Patriots for that pick, and the Patriots said, no, we're good. So that right there told me that if they're going for a quarterback, it wasn't Fields. That Fields was not even on their radar.
Right.
So for Mac Jones to fall all the way to number 15, I will guarantee you this. I think Jones will be starting at some point this season.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if Cam Newton gets off to the horrific if he gets off to a horrific start like how he finished the season last year.
I think he's done.
But then again, you think he's done?
Yeah, he's not the same as he was. So I think Newton's seen better days, and I think he's going to have more of a horrible start.
And I think also this sort of puts a little bit of a timer, if you would, on Jarrett Stidham, I think, too, because the way I'm thinking of this is that they may decide to bring back Brian Hoyer and maybe release Jarrett Stidham.
Wow.
Or release or trade Jarrett Stidham, because Stidham. It's obvious that if Stidham had any future with the Patriots whatsoever, he would have been used immediately after the Patriots were eliminated from the playoffs last year.
Right.
And instead, they waited until the final game of They waited until the second-to-last game of the season to give Stidham a start and see what he could do. And then they went back to Newton for the game against the Jets. Yeah. I mean, it was a complete waste to the point of where, you know, the season's already over. Why don't you just give Stidham the rest of the season, see what you have with him, and if there's, you know, if you feel you need to go after another quarterback, if Stidham isn't the answer, then go after another quarterback, which obviously they've done here with Mac Jones at the number 15. Now, going back to the top 10, we saw with Cincinnati last how horrific their offensive line was, where their offensive line was basically a bunch of human turnstiles.
Yeah.
They have, at the number 5 pick, they had the option to take Penei Sewell, who was the top offensive tackle of the draft out of Oregon, or go with Ja'Marr Chase like they ended up doing. And they ended up going with Chase. Okay, you add another weapon, and also, you know, Burrow's former teammate from LSU. But what good is a weapon if you don't have the protection if you don't have the time to be able to throw the ball to him? And did that surprise you a little bit, Lou, that they valued weapons over protection?
That is a little especially after, because I think the protection is more important.
Yeah, especially after Joe Burrow ended up tearing his ACL, I believe, this past season.
Yes. Yes. And I'll tell you, if it wasn't for that, I think maybe the Bengals would have been better.
Well, yeah, I think they definitely, because think about it, Ryan Finley came in and played the rest of the season, as opposed to if they had Burrow for the rest of the year. I mean, granted, yeah, they wouldn't have made the playoffs, but, you know, maybe they would have finished with a better record than what they did.
Oh, no question.
So, you know, I would have thought that with the number 5 pick, I mean, yeah, you know, you have the chance to get Ja'Marr Chase, but at the same time, I mean, you guys got T. Higgins last year at the beginning of the second round. You know, it's not like it's not like Burrow doesn't have any weapons. The reason I'm kind of thinking the reason why they took Ja'Marr Chase is because they lost AJ Green. That's literally the only reason why I can think that they would choose offense over protection. Now, Penei Sewell, he ended up going to Detroit with the number 7 pick, providing protection for Jared Goff, their new starting quarterback. And I mean, honestly, with Detroit, it was either they were going to go offensive line or take somebody on the defense, like maybe J.C. Horn, who ended up going next anyways, or Patrick Surtain. So the Lions pick didn't really surprise me. You know, the Miami Dolphins, they took Jalen Waddle, providing yet another weapon for Tua Tagovailoa. I guarantee you, Tua is going to be a lot better this year compared to his rookie season. I think Miami right now has made the right move by not going after Deshaun Watson like everybody thought they were rumored to be. Because now that Tua has somebody that he's thrown to before in college, they already have that chemistry. They know where each other is going to be, or he knows where Waddle's going to be out there in the field. So I think that's a definite win there for Miami with Jalen Waddle at number 6. As a Cowboy fan, Lou, you got to be pretty pissed that Denver ended up taking Pat Surtain one pick ahead of the Cowboys.
Yeah, that is a little. But we did get a pick in the up a little high, so it didn't. I don't think it's going to be that bad.
No, you guys did get Micah Parsons, who will fill in for Sean Lee. The most recently retired Sean Lee, might I add. That came as a bit of a surprise to me. But I really think that Dallas was aiming for Patrick Surtain. And when he got taken with the number 9 pick, that had to have pissed off Jerry Jones so much to the point of where...
Yeah.
Okay, they moved back in a trade with Philly to get the number 12 pick. Philly ends up taking Devontae Smith. Might I add, that's a huge, huge acquisition for Jalen Hurts. That basically shows that partnering up Smith once again with Jalen Hurts, the Alabama connection, that pretty much shows that Philadelphia is committed officially to Jalen Hurts. But when it comes to Dallas, though, it really seemed like that Pat Surtain was their target. And the fact that they lost out on him, it's almost as if something malfunctioned in Jerry Jones's brain. Because for the rest of the draft...
That's unusual.
No, not really. Not really unusual. But, it just seemed like... they had a plan, and then once that plan got tinkered with like it did, everything basically went to hell. Because okay, Micah Parsons was maybe taken 3 picks ahead of where he should have gone, because there were some mock drafts that had him going to the Patriots. But
right.
The rest of the draft, though, it kind of seemed like the Cowboys were reaching quite a lot on some of their picks.
Right.
I mean, do you think, Lou, that, maybe perhaps if they end up missing out on one guy, if a team misses out on one guy that they were really high on early in the draft, that kind of affects how they draft the rest of the, the rest of the draft? Because you're kind of thinking like, okay, well, this guy may be available in the third, but I have, you know, a second round pick, so why don't I just take him now instead of potentially losing out on him in the third round? You know, it kind of seemed that way with Dallas because a lot of their picks were defensive picks. And according to certain mock drafts, they reached by like a lot with these moves. But overall, though, how do you think your the draft ended up going for the Dallas Cowboys?
Well, maybe it could have been a little bit better. You know, we didn't have much of a great year, but still, I mean, our pick with Micah, you know, I'm satisfied with that, though.
Oh yeah, yeah. No.
So I was pleased to get that.
Yeah, Micah Parsons. That's definitely a very good pick for a Dallas defense that's losing, quite frankly, probably the heart of their defense in Sean Lee. You know,
yeah.
You get a guy like Micah Parsons, who a lot of people believe he might emerge as the best defensive player in the draft once everything is all said and done. You know, they say he's classified as a freak athlete with explosive strength, power, and speed as well. And they're saying if the Cowboys are the right system for him, he could play at a superstar level early on in his career. So this could potentially be a home run pick for Dallas.
You never know with rookies, though. I mean, they can go one way or they can go another. So, you know, I get a little skeptic about, you know, players in their first year, see what they're going to do. I mean, on paper, yeah, it looks like it could be a winner. But, you know, when they step onto the field, I'm like, oh, what do we do? Well, let's see. Three forced fumbles, an interception, sack for 35 yards, whatever, you know. So it's like, you know, what seems good on paper, though, doesn't always turn to be, you know, in reality. I mean, because, you know, look what happened with, you know, Sammy Boy from the Jets. You know, everybody was hyping him up. He didn't do, pardon the expression, jack shit.
Yeah, exactly. And now he's with Carolina. And, the fact that Carolina ended up taking J.C. Horn out of South Carolina, the cornerback, instead of taking Justin Fields, like a lot of people thought that if Carolina held on to the pick, that they would invest in a quarterback like Justin Fields. The fact that they did not do that tells me that that Sam Darnold is their starter. And especially
you know,
considering
they
got rid
of Teddy
Bridgewater, too.
There was one that was even a bigger surprise to me, and I was looking, and I really thought this player was going to get drafted in the first round, but did not. And I think you know who I mean.
Christian Barmore?
Wrong.
Who?
Kyle Trask.
No, I didn't see him going in the first round, honestly. I saw him as more of a third-round pick.
Wow. Boy, was I off
that. Well, I'm just looking at it like this. You know, he had a good start with Florida, but his big problem is he lacks a big arm. Even though he has the accuracy and he lit up SEC defenses early, he really seemed to fade as the season went on. And honestly, you know, I was shocked. I was shocked that he went over quarterbacks like Kellen Mond and Davis Mills, who were taken back to back at the top of the third.
Okay.
But,
thing is, though,
I mean,
whenever he's...
Go ahead.
No, I'll wait you finish because I just want to follow up on something.
Okay, well, I was just going to say, you know, I can kind of see, though, why Tampa Bay took him because of the fact that, you know, he's down there in Florida. Obviously, they probably had a lot of opportunities to scout him because of the fact that he's so close to them.
Yes.
Playing for the Florida Gators, and obviously Tampa Bay is in Florida. So maybe
Let's
perhaps
check.
Trask is the guy that they were most, they were most familiar with because of the close proximity.
Right. Whenever I hear the name Trask, it always reminds me of one of my favorite television villains. So that was that's what always got to me when I heard the name Trask. Oh boy.
But what were you going to follow up on?
Well, like I was just saying, whenever I hear the name Trask, it reminds me of my favorite television villains, because it was a villain. Well, it's just. Oh, you might know what I'm talking about, don't you?
No, probably not. I was just.
Okay. Oh, probably not. You're kind of young. I forgot.
Well, I was just what's it called? Sort of. Reminding myself, okay, that what you had said before, you know, that was what you were going to follow up with. I thought you
yes.
were going to follow up with something else.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Looking at the rest of the first round here, it seemed pretty obvious that. Let me go back to number 11 with the
yeah.
Giants. And out of all the years that Dave Gettleman
yeah.
has been in charge of the Giants, he has never traded up, or I mean never traded down until this
right.
year, with Chicago basically going right at the Giants, taking the 11th pick and investing in Justin Fields. Now
mm-hmm.
here's where my mind is blown here, because
yeah.
they already have Nick Foles on the roster with
yes
that huge amount of money that they're already giving him. They have
yes.
they just signed Andy Dalton to a contract worth about I think it was what $12 million or something like that.
Something like that, yes.
And they told Dalton when they signed him, "Yeah, you're going to be our starter." But yet they go after Justin Fields, and now they're going to have to give Fields. I don't know what the I don't know what the pay rate is for the 11th overall pick in terms of contracts, but now they're going to have to invest a whole lot more money into a quarterback like Justin Fields. You have multi-million dollars invested in three quarterbacks. At this point, to me, it kind of seems like bad business practice. If you're,
yeah.
if you're a team, you're gonna want to give starting money to your starting quarterback, but not have a backup with the contract like Nick Foles has. So either they're gonna get rid of
no.
Foles, or something's got to happen, because I don't see how they keep all three of these guys on the roster.
No
Obviously,
way,
they're
no
not
going
to get rid of Fields. I don't see them getting rid of Fields, obviously, because they just drafted him. I would have to think that Foles is going to be on his way out, because you know they're not going to get rid of Dalton, because that would send a message to everybody, all other players around the
sucks.
League saying. You know, don't sign with Chicago, because, you know, right after you sign with them, you could be traded away or released. So,
yeah.
I mean, I understand Chicago was in the market for a quarterback, you know, trying to find their next franchise guy.
Right.
The only thing I can think of is maybe perhaps because next year's quarterback market is downright awful. From all indications, from what I've heard,
yeah.
that it's not going to be, you know, if you're a team looking for a quarterback, next year is not the draft that you want to be a part of.
No.
So maybe that's why they moved up and took Justin Fields this draft, so that, you know, in case maybe. I believe the Dalton deal is a 1 year deal. So okay, maybe Fields will be their starter next year. Okay, that kind of makes more sense then. But the Chargers, they took Rashawn Slater with the 13th pick. Pretty obvious.
Yes.
I thought they were going to go offensive line because they need protection for Justin Herbert. He already has the weapon.
Oh, sure.
Even though they did lose Hunter Henry, he does have the weapons. So, oh, speaking of tight ends, let me ask you this. What do you think of the Falcons taking Kyle Pitts with the number 4 pick?
Oh, God.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about that. Atlanta hasn't been, you know, the stronghold as it has been since the epic loss in the Super Bowl. So, you know, we really got to think about that. It could be a good move, but, you know, I mean, Florida was, you know, he was great with Florida. I don't know, maybe he'll make something happen for Atlanta. I mean, because they need a lot of help.
Yeah, he was the number one receiver for Florida, not just tight end, but he had the most catches out of any Florida Gator on that roster. But I mean, you take a look at their depth chart right now. Obviously, Matt Ryan is the starter at quarterback. They did just sign AJ McCarron to be his backup. They've gone from Todd Gurley to Mike Davis now as the starting running back, who obviously, for people who don't know, Mike Davis took over for Christian McCaffrey when he got injured last year and had quite a few good games. So he's getting paid starting running back money, which honestly I think is deserved after the performance he put on last year the absence of McCaffrey. Then you got Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, and Russell Gage as your three receivers. With it looks like Olamide Zaccheaus is the number 4 receiver on the depth chart.
Yes.
Then you got Kyle Pitts and Hayden Hurst as your 2 tight ends. If everybody is clicking and everybody is healthy, I think that is a dangerous lineup for Atlanta.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, you know, a lot of things have to fall into place, but with the addition of Pitts, that's a dangerous lineup.
Yes.
Because they compared Kyle Pitts to the likes of Rob Gronkowski when they were analyzing
the pick. It's always tough to compare players to, you know, I always know it's tough to compare players because you're comparing a rookie to, like, one of the greatest tight ends of all time, even though I'm not a Patriots fan. I mean, Gronkowski, you know, was one of the best. And, you know, it always irks me, like, well, how are you going to compare someone who hasn't even played a game yet? And, you know, like, that's, you know, it's just being, you know, presumptuous. So I thought, like, give him, you know, it's got to be time. You got to give him, like, at least 2 to 3 years before you can come close to comparing notes to some of the greats who've played the game or have played the game.
That's true. That's true. It may be a little too why did that go up? It's a little too early to compare him, but
yes,
when you take a look at the strengths that he brings, another comparison was Darren Waller of the Vegas Raiders that he was compared to. But he was probably out of all receivers, the biggest frame in terms of body built and the largest wingspan of this year's draft class, which basically makes him a mismatch nightmare. To me, that screams Gronkowski.
Yeah.
Now, we'll see if he can develop into a player like Gronkowski was in his prime years. And if he does, then that's a very dangerous weapon that that the Atlanta Falcons have.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt that.
Yeah.
But, it's too early to compare right now. I mean, you know, like you're saying, the old saying, comparing apples to oranges. So, you know, is he the apple or the orange, or whatever the case may be. But I don't think you should, you know, make a rush of judgment saying that, you know, he's being compared to Gronkowski or not. Not for someone who hasn't even played the game yet. I mean, you can make all the predictions you want, but, you know, it's not really being accurate.
Yeah. Now, after the 15th pick, we had Arizona taking Zaven Collins out of Tulsa at number 16.
Mm-hmm.
You had Alex Leatherwood from Alabama,
yep,
going at number 17 to the Vegas Raiders.
Yes.
18, the Miami Dolphins took Jalen Phillips out of Miami.
Right.
Well, it says Miami, Florida. Was he? Oh, he must have been a Hurricane.
Yeah.
Jalen Phillips. Then you had Jamin Davis going to the Washington football team at 19. Washington was another one of those teams that was looking to move up in order to potentially take a quarterback. Obviously, that didn't end up happening. Kadarius Toney went number 20 to the New York Giants. Quiddy Pay went 21 to the Indianapolis Colts. Then this next pick, Farley from Virginia Tech going to Tennessee. And I understand that Tennessee, you know, they're looking to rebuild their secondary, considering they lost pretty much everybody this year to free agency.
Yes,
but
yes,
I think this one is a little bit of a risk here because Caleb Farley has all those back surgeries.
Oh, that is a risk.
He had all those back surgeries in college, and I mean, granted, Gronkowski did the same thing too. Had the same thing too, you know, during his career at Arizona. So
right.
And obviously, things turned out well for Gronkowski, but you know, the thing with Farley is, I mean, with a defensive player, it's a little different. I think, you know.
Yes.
The biggest thing is going to be, can he even stay healthy? If he can stay healthy, he would definitely be a much needed.
Oh, if he's healthy, he's fine.
To Tennessee's secondary.
Oh, if you're healthy, there's no problem there. But if you're going to take a chance on someone's, like, shall we say, injury prone, that's taking a big risk, and you know that can do more harm than good. That's the way I see it. So you really got to be careful with what I call the injury-prone player.
Yeah, because I believe they said Farley has had two back surgeries so far.
Yeah, at least.
And Gronkowski sort of had the same thing. Gronkowski had a third back surgery when he was with the Patriots, and they had said no player had ever played after three back surgeries.
No.
So Farley, you know, obviously Gronkowski was the first to do that, but Farley, granted, maybe age is sort of helping him here, but you're kind of tiptoeing that line at this point.
Yeah. I mean, in football, you're 110 years old anyway. So, all right, maybe not 110. You get the idea.
Yeah. But you know, with each injury,
yes,
it furthers the risk level, basically.
Oh, sure.
Then you had Christian Darrisaw going from Virginia Tech to the Minnesota Vikings at 23. This next one, Najee Harris, the running back from Alabama,
yeah,
going to Pittsburgh. This one was probably the worst kept secret in all of the NFL mock drafts. Because every single mock draft had Najee Harris going to Pittsburgh, and it makes sense because they lost James Conner. They lost James Conner this past off season, so they needed a replacement, and Najee Harris is by far the top running back of the draft. And
now, does that include mock drafts? Are you thinking the same person I'm thinking? You know, of all the mock drafts, because there's one in particular, of course, that really irks me, and I think you know who that is.
Honestly, probably not.
Mel Kiper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that's another thing, too. Mel Kiper, they had that, they had this this source off, if you would, between Mel Kiper and Todd McShay. As a matter of fact,
ooh,
I believe
yeah,
it was McShay. I think it was McShay that had the Patriots taking, just for an example, he had the Patriots taking Mac Jones, I believe, in his last mock draft. And, you know, they do these mock drafts based off of what their sources are telling them. So,
right.
And I know Mel Kiper, you know, they had he was a primary focus in the later rounds of the draft because,
yeah,
you know, a lot of his picks were starting to come in as correct,
interesting,
and correct analysis and whatnot. But I mean, here at number 24, Najee Harris, that was a no brainer. If you're looking
mm-hmm.
for a replacement, I mean, there was a little bit of discussion, like, okay, you know, if you're a running back, is it Najee Harris? Is it Travis Etienne? Or is it – who was the one who went in the second round? Or is it Javonte Williams out of North Carolina? You know, a lot of people were trying to debate, you know, who was the top running back in the draft. Honestly, in my opinion, it's Najee Harris. I don't see Etienne performing outperforming him, and neither do I see Williams outperforming him. So Harris here, definitely the best pick I think that the Steelers could have made in this draft at this spot, especially considering the fact that they lost James Conner. You know, they don't have a bona fide number one running back until now. So I think Najee Harris, we could potentially see a return to the Le'Veon Bell days of Pittsburgh when Bell was when Bell was a superstar for Pittsburgh, but except it'll be
right.
Najee Harris. And speaking of Etienne, he ended up going next at number 25 to the Jacksonville
yes.
Jaguars, reuniting him with Trevor Lawrence. So that's basically a 1-2 punch there in Jacksonville. Although, keep in mind, you know, Jacksonville, it's going to take, like I said on Thursday night, it's going to take a lot more than just a Travis Etienne and a Trevor Lawrence addition to turn that team around. It's going to take a lot more than those two. And
yeah.
While I'm on the Jaguars, let me get your – what are your thoughts on Tim Tebow coming back to football and
why?
Finally making the transition to tight end?
I'll just sum it for you in one word. Why? He failed the first time. Why would he come back?
Well, you know, a lot of teams said that if he had transitioned to tight end earlier, before he
yeah.
ended up going to baseball, he would have had a spot on rosters.
Mm. Six, 7 years later?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Actually, I believe.
I mean, look. I mean, he has a good career as a broadcaster, so, you know, why would you want to give it up? You know, you've probably lost a step or two, you know, since you stopped. So, I don't really think that's a wise move for Tebow to come back in the NFL now.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of odd myself when I saw, like, I thought it had
yeah.
to have been a joke, like somebody in my group had made it up or something, because he hasn't played football since 2012, so nearly a decade.
Right.
I mean, well, actually, I should say more like 2013, because he was on the Patriots
okay.
for 2013. Then he ended up getting cut right after training camp. Then he signed a contract
yes.
with the Eagles in 2015. he lost the third string job to Matt Barkley that year.
Yeah.
And then he was released after the preseason. And now he's making an attempted return after his baseball career failed. So, you know, I still think, and I said this Thursday night too, when he was with the Patriots, if he had transitioned to tight end, he would have made that roster. Because the Patriots at the time were in need of a tight end. And I honestly think now that when it comes to Tim Tebow, you know, he's kind of sick and tired of doing the analyst job to the point of where almost as if he has to go,
right.
You know, okay. he has to go back into a sport, whether it's unretiring from baseball or going back to football like he's attempting. It's almost as if he cannot stay off the field. He has to try and get back into things. And I think also the fact that his former coach, Urban Meyer, is now the head coach of the Jaguars, I think that's kind of helping things out a bit. So I would not be shocked at all. I know he worked out for the Jaguars recently as a tight end. I would not be shocked at all if he ends up making the team.
Really? I don't know if this will shock me.
Yeah, honestly, I wouldn't be shocked at all because the Jaguars, they're trying to do anything to get themselves back into contention. And obviously with Urban Meyer having coached Tim Tebow during college, you know, Meyer knows Tebow probably more than anybody else in the league right now. So
I'll give you that.
If he feels that he could do something at tight end, you know, maybe perhaps we're going to see it happen. I don't know. I'm still kind of shocked though at the fact that he's even attempting to come back. But the rest of the first round, the Browns, they took Greg Newsom out of Northwestern to put across from their current cornerback Denzel Ward. So basically, that's the 1-2 combination they're going to go with there. Rashad Bateman, he ended up going to the Baltimore Ravens, which kind of surprised me a little bit because doesn't Baltimore have enough weapons to begin with? And granted, Hollywood Brown had an off year last year, but Jim brought up this question Thursday night, and I want to put this out to you, Lou. Isn't it time to start questioning whether or not Lamar Jackson really is the guy to put everything on?
I should have answered that already.
Baltimore.
You should have answered that already.
Because,
I mean, honestly,
from what we've seen so far, it's been two 1-and-outs playoffs.
Yes.
So, you know, there's, with all of his talent that he has, He has shown nothing so far for the Ravens.
Yeah,
so,
what happened?
You know, you basically have to wonder if maybe they need to start investing in somebody else.
I'm afraid you're right.
I mean, it's kind of questionable. And I think that's something that the Ravens may want to keep an eye on as they head further into his career. One thing that kind of shocked me though was that they did not take a center, especially after losing Matt Skura to free agency this year. I forget who he ended up going to, but they lost Matt Skura to free agency, and you know there was that center Dickerson from Alabama, who ended up going to the Eagles in the second round. I thought Dickerson was probably going to be a first-round talent, and hell, I thought Christian Barmore was going to be a first-round talent.
Really?
But, yeah, because Christian Barmore, he's probably the top defensive tackle in the draft.
Yes.
If not the top defensive tackle, then maybe the second-ranked defensive tackle. But, you know, he is going to be an impact player, I believe. So that's why you saw the Patriots, you know, do what they ended up, what they normally don't do, which is trade up. Usually you see the Patriots trade back. So the fact that they traded up and they took Christian Barmore, they're saying that Barmore could end up starting games at defensive tackle at some point this season for the Patriots, despite all of their additions that they made. You also saw Javonte Williams go to Denver, so not only does Melvin Gordon's fantasy value go down in Denver, but you have the replacement for Philip Lindsay now, with Lindsay signing elsewhere. The Jets, they ended up signing Elijah, or they ended up drafting Elijah Moore of Ole Miss, probably the best slot receiver in the draft. I got to tell you, you know, when you're talking about winners and losers of the draft this year, the Jets were a big winner, especially when you take a look
at what they do with it.
Yeah, that's the big question, you know. Can the Jets actually use this momentum and, you know, transform the team the way that they need to transform it? You know, back into a contender. Obviously, we'll see if that ends up taking place. But, you know, adding Elijah Moore, it's odd because I kind of thought that, I mean, they're bad overall, but I guess what's your thoughts, Lou? Do you think that they needed to focus on offense or on defense more in this draft? Because, I mean, they're bad overall, but what area do you think is was perhaps their biggest weakness?
I think maybe I have to go with offense.
Okay, well, you know, in that case, then they probably made the right move going offense with their first three picks. Obviously, you know, the defense needs to be addressed at some point here, but, I mean, they're definitely one of the best draft boards this year, I believe, with who they ended up taking. Asante Samuel Jr., he's one of the notable names that was taken in the second round. He ends up going to the Los Angeles Chargers with the 47th pick of the draft. Some other notable names here. Pat Freiermuth, he ended up going from Penn State, the 55th pick of the draft, to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Obviously, Kyle Trask, he ends up going to Tampa Bay with the last pick of the second round. I still kind of think it was a little bit of a reach, but, you know, I guess it doesn't really matter because the next couple of picks after that, a couple of quarterbacks went back to back anyways. So, I know one thing that probably happened though was we all know about the Aaron. That's another thing. Before we continue on with the draft, what are your thoughts? What, you're not buying the Aaron Rodgers situation?
No. This is all just a big act.
I mean, I found it kind of odd. I mean, I understand he would probably be pissed after they drafted Jordan Love last year. But I did find it kind of odd that with him winning the NFL MVP this year, you know, we never got a sense that there was really any sort of, you know, there was any sort of problems within the organization with him. And now this comes out literally, I believe, the day of the draft, actually, the day of the first round, a couple of hours before. I think it was like maybe 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, something like that. All of a sudden, this news ends up hitting the news wire from Adam Schefter. And apparently, he is, quote-unquote, threatening to sit out the rest of his deal unless they trade him. And one of the rumors that floated around was that San Francisco had offered the number 3 pick as well as more draft picks as well involved in the deal, and Green Bay said, no, we're good.
Yeah.
And Aaron Rodgers demanded that they take the San Francisco trade offer, and they refused to. But you don't buy any of that that talk?
No.
And actually there was a rumor, Mark Schlereth, who obviously used to play in the NFL, and he's actually, I believe he was a former Bronco, wasn't he?
I believe so, yes.
He was either a former Bronco or a former Ram. But anyways, he ended up calling in to one of the radio stations out in Denver. And basically he said that a trade for Aaron Rodgers was as close to getting done as you can get. So everybody was believing, you know, that there was going to be a trade for Aaron Rodgers, and that Denver ended up not taking a quarterback when they came up in the first round. You know, that sort of led a little bit of credence that, okay, maybe there's some truth to this. And lo and behold, it ends up being false, you know, or if it isn't false, you know, they're gonna take their time with it. But there was a new report that came out today that actually came out a couple of hours ago that says that Aaron Rodgers will only return to the Green Bay Packers if their current general manager is fired.
Uh-huh. So obviously it's a personal matter.
That's what it sounds like. Their general manager,
yeah,
Brian Gutekunst, as hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, Brian Gutekunst is at odds with Aaron Rodgers, apparently. This is according to Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports. He's quoted as saying, asked if anything could be done to repair the relationship between Rodgers and the team. The source said a reconciliation may not be possible if Gutekunst remains, and that team president Mark Murphy is aware of the quarterback's feelings about the general manager. And it says that the fracture points between Rodgers and Gutekunst stem largely from the latter's decision to trade up in the 2020 NFL draft to select Jordan Love without informing Aaron Rodgers of doing so. And a source told Robinson that Rodgers felt Gutekunst's plan was to move on from him after the 2020 season in order to make Love the Rodgers, or in order to make Love the Packers' quarterback. And obviously, if that was the idea, Rodgers upended that by putting together preseason like he did this year.
Yes.
However, you know, the Packers throughout this whole thing have said that Rodgers is still their quarterback. You know, he's going nowhere. And actually, I believe Gutekunst, this is the same guy that drove Brett Favre out of Green Bay, I believe, as well.
Oh, yeah.
That's what that's what I remember about him.
Or no. Actually, no. He's been with the team since 1997, where he started as a scouting intern.
Wow.
But he was named general manager in January of 2018. However, he was a part of the front office during the Brett Favre years. He's entering. We saw this whole thing happen with Brett Favre as well, to the point with the fact that when he was traded to the Jets, they made sure that they put a clause in the deal that if the Jets then flipped him to Minnesota, they would have to give up an additional 3 first-round picks as part of the deal that sent Favre from Green Bay over to the Jets.
Yeah.
So it does not shock me at all that something like this is coming up once again with a top quarterback star in the league, and it just happens to be with the Green Bay Packers once again.
Right.
Robinson noted here that Rodgers is willing to consider taking a hardline stance with the Packers in order to get what he wants, including holding out during training camp and possibly retirement as well.
I see.
And this also comes on the heels of the fact that he's one of the front-running contenders to be the new host of Jeopardy, apparently.
See, how's it going to tie in, with that? Because I don't think it's going to be a tough schedule. I mean, he's got to do practice and everything, and, those maybe are fitting on taping days. So how's it going to work out with him doing Jeopardy and staying on the team at the same time?
Well, usually when they do tapings, they do multiple shows every day.
Yeah, I know that.
Per
but,
day.
Yes, but mostly it's on weekends, and he plays with the Packers on Sunday. So that could be a bit of a problem.
Mm. Yeah, you know what? You're right. You're right. That could actually be a huge problem in that case. If he's hang on, where do they tape Jeopardy?
Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's going to be a problem. That's going to be a huge scheduling
problem.
I'll
take my career. I'll take my careers in deep shit, Alex, for 200. No.
You know, I think if they come back and tell him that he has the job, I'm kind of thinking he may just retire.
That's what I'm thinking, too, because I don't think they're going to move the show to Wisconsin.
Well, no, obviously not, but,
no.
I think if they tell him he has the job and if he's still in piss-poor relationship
bye-bye.
with the Packers, and their general manager, I think he may just call it a career at that point.
Yeah, I told you who else is also going to be doing the last week of the show for the year, right?
I don't think you did.
Oh, you might want to sit down for this one.
Oh.
Joe Buck. Joe Buck will have the last week of the season.
Oh, God. Yeah, you know what? I forgot about that. I had heard about it, but... Oh, God, that means as if he doesn't have enough hosting duties to begin with.
Duh.
Now he's gonna take on Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Hell,
well,
I thought Aaron Rodgers' time on Jeopardy was bad enough. Buck may actually be worse.
No, actually, Dr. Oz was worse than Rodgers, but Joe
True.
Buck takes the cake. Oh, Jack is
running
brave right now.
I may just watch it only to see the train wreck as it happens. If I'm being honest here, I may just watch it only to see the train wreck.
Oh
man,
there goes our ratings, folks.
Yeah, no, obviously he's going to have to give up some sort of hosting gig, right? If he gets the Jeopardy gig, I would think.
Oh, God help us all.
He's not going to go through with staying on, you know, staying on NFL on Fox or staying on MLB on Fox.
Well, don't forget, Michael Strahan is a lot, too.
True, but those are, you know, spaced out. Those are spaced out. You know, Strahan, he does the what is it, Good Morning America, or is
yes.
it Live with Michael and
Good
Kelly
Morning America.
Like
he gave
that.
Up. He gave up that job to go do Good Morning America, and you got Ryan Seacrest.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. Okay. Well, then in that case, Good Morning America normally is only what, Monday through Friday, I believe, right?
Yes, but it's awful early.
True. And then he does the NFL on Fox on
yes.
Friday or on Sundays and sometimes on Saturdays during the
playoffs. But remember, because that's also in Los Angeles, so he's got a hell of a commuting problem.
True.
How do you sleep on Sunday
well,
nights?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And then another thing too is, you know, when this is one thing I was thinking of when you mentioned Joe Buck. Jeopardy isn't on Fox, if I recall correctly. They're on
It's not a network show. It's scattered all over the place. Sometimes it's on a CBS station, sometimes it's on NBC, et cetera, et cetera. It's not to the world, it's just one network.
Oh, okay. So it's syndicated, basically. Okay.
You want to call it that? Go ahead. I call it scattered. But you want to use it to
okay.
syndicate?
Well,
go ahead.
Because I was going to say, wouldn't that create a conflict of interest because of the fact that Joe Buck
Hell
is
yeah.
technically under contract with Fox?
Well, no.
But
being
if it's
syndicated, it's not. Being it's syndicated is not the same thing.
Yeah, so in that case, you know, then if Joe Buck is offered the job, it would technically work out then, because you know he's still affiliated with Fox, and sometimes it could potentially be shown on Fox with it being syndicated. So,
I mean, I think it does in some Fox stations, but it's not Fox Network, which I honestly don't understand how Michael Strahan could work for ABC and Fox, because I thought that could be a problem because you know. Back in the old days, I don't think you're supposed to work with two different sources. But I guess the rules have changed.
Well, yeah, they've become more accepting, if I can
yeah.
put it that way. Like say,
and
for
people
example,
think I'm crazy with my schedule.
Like, for example, Billy Jaffe of the NHL, he works with, I think it's NHL Network, and he also does
yes.
some Bruins content with Nesson. So, you know, it's become a little more accepting, I guess, to be with more than one network. Like, for example, you also have I forget what's his name, the guy that just signed with WWE. He was a member of MLB Network. And I
right.
don't know if he still does that, if he still does MLB Network or not, or if he's officially exclusive to WWE now. But, you know, basically it's sort of like they've become more accepting of people being able to be affiliated with two networks at once.
Well, it's a lot cheaper than trying to clone yourself, you know.
Yeah.
You get the idea.
Yeah. Now back to the draft here. In the third
okay.
round, Kellen Mond, he ends up going to Minnesota. I find that kind of interesting because didn't they just invest in Kirk Cousins?
Yes.
Kind of makes me wonder now if they're thinking on moving on from Cousins at some point in the future here, maybe after a year or two.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Because Kellen Mond is seen as one of those players that with a little seasoning could end up with his upside and potential could end up being a starter. you know, a reliable starter at quarterback in the league. And actually, I thought that, you know, if the Patriots weren't gonna go after a quarterback in round one, I thought maybe with round two, you know, they'd go after somebody like a Kellen Mond or a Davis Mills, who ended up going to Houston, and that's a whole entire different story with Houston. You know, it was a little surprising though to see Minnesota take Kellen Mond with the second pick in the third round. But Davis Mills going to Houston. Now you have Tyrod Taylor as your probable starter this year with Deshaun Watson on the ropes. You got Tyrod Taylor as your probable starter with Davis Mills probable backup. Or no, not Davis Mills, Ryan Finley being the backup and Davis Mills now being the long-term project. To me, this screams that Houston is on the verge of getting rid of Watson, whether it's him being put on the commissioner's exempt list until his legal issues get sorted, or they end up trading him.
Because otherwise,
why do you take a quarterback in the third round if you're not planning on if you're not planning on investing in a quarterback?
That'd be a waste.
Another notable a couple actually of notable names that came off the board as well. Hunter Long, the tight end out of Boston College, he ends up going to the Miami Dolphins. Probably one of the better players on Boston College this year. A big-bodied pass catcher, draws some comparisons to former Pro Bowler Kyle Rudolph back when Rudolph was at his peak. Says here Long is an improving blocker, but will make his mark as a crafty pass catcher, running down seams or settling in soft spots between the hashes, according to NFL.com. We also saw Tommy Tremble from Notre Dame go 83rd overall to the Carolina Panthers. Basically, it sounds like he may end up becoming the designated blocker in multi tight end sets out there in Carolina, from what it sounds like.
Yes.
We did see Aaron Rodgers, assuming he stays in Green Bay and maybe he plays, we did see him get a weapon in the third round with Amari Rodgers from Clemson being taken with the 85th pick overall.
No relation, right?
And, you know, yeah, no relation, no.
Okay.
You know, this was one of the things that I believed may have pissed him off, too. Even further is the fact that instead of going offense and trying to get him more weapons or protection, they ended up going defense with their first couple of picks. Yeah. Well, no, they actually took a center in the second round too, but you know, they ended up going defense to start off the draft. And after hearing of that news about Aaron Rodgers to begin with, it wasn't looking good. I thought that, oh, they're definitely pissing him. They're basically sticking it to him now at this point.
Oh, yeah.
But adding Amari Rodgers, you know, that is going to help out the offense for Green Bay. So that's a pretty good pick at the 85th pick. We saw Trey Sermon go from Ohio State to the San Francisco 49ers with the 88th pick. This is probably some reinforcement out there for San Francisco for what's his name, Raheem Mostert. If Mostert ends up having more injury troubles, Sermon now slots behind Jeff Wilson Jr. With Wilson Jr. still being the backup running back, but Trey Sermon slots in as the third back in that depth chart right now. So that looks like a big weapon potentially down the line for the Niners. We did also see Ben Cleveland go to the Ravens with the 94th pick. So the Ravens adding a little bit more protection. Cleveland played obviously for the Georgia Bulldogs this year.
Yes.
Let's see. Oh, wait a minute. Where is the Patriots pick? Where is the Patriots pick here? Ronnie Perkins from Oklahoma ended up going to the Patriots at 96. And this one was met with a lot of this was probably one of the big steals potentially of the draft for the Patriots. He's described as an energetic edge defender with heavy hands. Perkins is a power rusher with disruptive potential. He wears down blockers with relentless effort and violent hands. Perkins is a bit raw and unrefined as a technician, but his energy gives him a chance to shine as a situational playmaker early in his career.
Right.
And it's weird because New England is pretty stacked, I thought, at the edge rushing spot. So it kind of makes me wonder, let's see, where is he slotted currently? Barmore is the backup right defensive end right now. Let me see, where does Perkins slot in? Perkins right now is the third sub linebacker right now behind Kyle Van Noy and Chase Winovich. So this is, you know, this was kind of surprising to me because it kind of made me wonder, is Belichick really that pissed off at Winovich because of how Winovich handled some media obligations last year? It kind of makes me wonder if maybe perhaps Belichick is sending a message to Winovich saying, you know, either straighten up or you know, there's a replacement for you. What I was kind of stunned, though, was that the Patriots did not take a kicker, even though Nick Folk was reliable last year. He's still getting old. He's 36, going to be 37 this year. And I was kind of surprised, too, that they didn't take a cornerback at some point as well, because Stephon Gilmore, he's on the final year of his deal, about $7 million. And considering the type of player he is, there's no way in hell that Gilmore is playing for $7 million this season.
No.
He's going to get traded at some point. So it's, you know, that's why they signed Jalen Mills, if anything.
Right.
Well, that and also Mills can play not just corner, but also safety as well. But, you know, I've been thinking, okay, when's this Gilmore trade going to come? When's this Gilmore trade going to come? And it still hasn't. So either Gilmore really is gonna play for only $7 million, or maybe perhaps they're working on an extension with him. But I don't know. I was just kind of surprised that, you know, New England, they pretty much decided to go with other defensive areas, essentially. But yeah, you know, overall, I think as far as the draft went, I would say probably the winners, depending on how, just looking on paper right now, I'd say for winners, you'd probably have to look at New England. You'd probably have to look at the Jets. I would say more than likely you would have to say the Giants because of what they were able to do as far as trades go. As far as trades go, and they were able to still get value with some of their picks that they made. as far as a loser, I would kind of have to say the Saints, because the Saints.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what the hell they were thinking with some of their picks.
So they were,
you know,
thinking.
It's there were other options available, and although they did take one of their picks, they did take a guy that would have been a that's going to be a replacement for Kwon Alexander. You know, a lot of people thought that there would be a reunion now that Alexander still hasn't re-signed with San Francisco. A lot of people thought there would be a reunion with Kwon Alexander and the Saints, and obviously with what the Saints did in the draft this year, that's not going to happen. But
that was rumored to happen.
It was rumored to happen, but it seems unlikely now with the way that the Saints drafted this year.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to give a loss to, or I'm going to give a loser spot to the Cowboys, not because of their first round pick, but because of the fact that they reached for pretty much all of their other.
I get it.
I just kind of feel like, you know, some of their picks that they made could have been available later on.
Right.
And there were other options out there that they could have taken. But I still think the Micah Parsons pick was probably their best pick that they made this year. Let's see. I'd say probably another winner would be the Miami Dolphins because of how they how they beefed up their roster. Not just providing more offense and protection for Tua, but overall, it really seemed like Miami had a pretty good draft this year. Another loser, I'd take the Cincinnati Bengals. Yeah, they did have a little bit of good value. They did have a little bit of good value with some of their with their trade down that they did with New England, but
okay,
I'd say probably the biggest one though, taking Ja'Marr Chase over Penei Sewell. I still don't understand it.
Yeah,
I still don't, and I probably won't for quite some time. Yeah, you know, this draft is really hard. Here's another one. Jaguars are winners. The fact that they were able to take not just Trevor Lawrence, which is obvious, but the fact that they were also able to land his running back teammate in Travis Etienne as well. I thought with Etienne being one of the top running backs in the draft, I thought he would be taken before 25. So the fact that he was able to fall to 25, that's a big win for Jacksonville, if anything. And it may also be a little bit of a slap in the face, though, to one of their running backs, considering when you take a look at how their depth chart is right now. They literally just they signed Carlos Hyde in the offseason, and they had James Robinson as their starter last year. It almost seems like it's a little bit of a slap in the face to Robinson by signing Hyde and then drafting Etienne, because now Etienne is literally their number one starter on according to ESPN here on their depth chart. So this draft was absolutely wild just based off of everything that ended up taking place this year. All right, what did you think, Lou? Who do you think had the best and worst drafts this year?
I'm always hard to figure me who I think was best and worst. You know, it's kind of hard to compare. But I think the Jets made it work. I think they made the best. And of course, well, the Bengals being who they are,
yeah, they got the worst. I mean, I don't see nothing coming out of them.
You should call them the Bungles.
You know what? Actually, another team that didn't too bad that didn't do too bad for itself was the Washington football team. They got Benjamin St. Juice in the third round. They got Sam Cosmi out of Texas.
Yes.
In the second, first round, they granted they did try to get a trade up to get a quarterback. That didn't work out. They did get Jamin Davis from Kentucky in the first round. You know, not that bad of a draft for Washington. And you know, Vegas actually at one point I believe they had back to back picks. They ended up taking Alex Leatherwood in the first, and I want to double check, was it the second round? I think it was the second round that they had back to back. No, maybe it was the third then. Because Vegas, they ended up taking Mo Rigg from TCU in the second round. And obviously the next pick was Kelvin Joseph to the Dallas Cowboys. Let me check. Maybe it was the third round. Or I might just be forgetting here because, no, it was the third round. Okay. Yeah, they took Malcolm Kuntz from Buffalo, and they ended up taking Divine Diablo from Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
So not that honestly, not that bad.
No, obviously not.
And Carolina, actually, too. I may consider them a winner here because they took Brady Christensen from BYU. They ended up also taking Tommy Tremble from Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
They had of course, what's the name? J.C. Horn from South Carolina in the first round.
Yes.
So there were actually quite a few big hits here in the early rounds of the draft. And let me check. Did they have a second? Yeah, they ended up taking Terrace Marshall Jr. from LSU.
Yes.
The wide receiver out of LSU with the 59th pick of the draft. So, all in all, not that bad. Not that bad at all.
No.
Now, apart from the draft, we also had the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They brought back Antonio Brown on a one-year deal worth about $3.1 million, but he can make up to $6.25 million this year. You're saying it's dumb?
Yeah, bringing back Antonio Clown. Ugh.
Why do you think that? Because last year he had 45 catches for 483 yards and four touchdowns. Plus he also had a couple
of troublemaker
touchdowns, I think, in the playoffs too.
Yeah, but he just can't stay out of trouble.
True. I mean, he did just settle. He did just settle with his former friend. I guess we can call her a former friend now because they had been friends since college before those accusations came out. You know, Tampa, they're actually, I believe they mentioned at some point this week, they are the first Super Bowl champion to bring back all of the core pieces of their roster from the previous
year.
So they really must be buying into the Tom Brady, you know, the TB12 method in order to bring everybody back in.
Yeah.
And this new report that actually came out about 5 hours ago, according to Adam Schefter, people in league circles believe that Deshaun Watson will not play in 2021. Not just that, but there are people who believe his career in Houston as well is over. He is still facing lawsuits, civil lawsuits from 22 different women filed over the past few months, the most recent of 22? Which was filed in April. 22 different women. Commissioner Roger Goodell did tell ESPN on Thursday that the league is monitoring the situation. Obviously, you know, he had requested a trade in January before all this came out. The quarterback was unhappy to be left out of the hiring process for general manager Nick Caserio.
Yes.
And the Texans, meanwhile, you know, have said that they're committed to Watson, but now it looks like his time is at its end, especially considering the fact that they drafted Davis Mills with their third-round pick this year, and also signing veteran Tyrod Taylor to a one-year deal as well.
Yes.
Also, I believe this was a stat, too. Let me see if I can get this this up here. Going back to the draft for a second here. Alabama, I believe, became – wait, let me just make sure that this is correct. I believe they said that Alabama became the first team to have five offensive players taken in the first round of a – university to have five offensive players get taken in the first round of a draft. And yep, actually I just found that, post. Cause you had Jalen Waddle, you had Devontae Smith, Mac Jones, Alex Leatherwood, and Najee Harris all go in the first round. And a whole bunch more, obviously. Let's see. One of the previous stories that obviously this had an impact on what the Broncos did in the draft. They acquired Teddy Bridgewater from the Panthers in exchange for only a sixth round pick. It's odd, don't you think? After seeing how Bridgewater played with New Orleans, and he had a bad year that, well, I shouldn't say bad year, but he had a mediocre year this year with Carolina.
Yes.
And now he was able to be acquired for as low as a sixth round pick. And not just that, but Carolina also agreed to take on a portion of Bridgewater's remaining contract. So if anything, that's a win for the Broncos right there. We had mentioned that Sean Lee had announced his retirement, but also announcing his retirement was Cardinals offensive tackle Marcus Gilbert, formerly the second round pick of Pittsburgh in the 2011 NFL draft. Gilbert never played a single down with the Cardinals the past 2 years due to injuries. He walks away with 4,628 career snaps across seven seasons with the Steelers, becoming a, as they call it, an uber effective right tackle. And I believe the Cardinals addressed his absence in the draft, I think. Now this story is drawing a little bit of news here. Peter King of NBC Sports is saying he wouldn't be surprised if the Falcons traded Julio Jones in the offseason.
Mm.
And meanwhile, NFL Network's Ian Rappaport is also saying that the Falcons are at least toying with the idea of trading Julio after receiving calls from multiple teams about a trade for the 32-year-old superstar wideout. King mentions that the Falcons don't really want to trade Julio, but his recent injury troubles and the team's salary cap crunch could necessitate such a move.
As he has
a $23 million cap hit this year and a $20 million cap hit the 2 years after that. Now, one of the potential landing spots for Julio has been mentioned as the Vegas Raiders, as John Gruden is one of those coaches who can't resist veteran stars in the twilight of their careers. However, teams who are receiver needy, like the Patriots, the Titans, and Ravens, could also inquire about a trade for Julio as well. And an NFL general manager told Peter King that sentimentality has nothing to do with – or building the roster has nothing to do with sentimentality, you know, for current players, existing players that have been with Atlanta for a majority of their careers, and it all has to do with the current reality of the tight salary cap.
Yes.
So this is something I think that should be really paid close attention to here, as, you know, if Julio ends up leaving, that's about 20% of the targets that will be open up for new distribution to other receivers. That ends up being the case here. So not only we just got done with the NFL draft, but we do also have the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs just around the corner.
Yes.
And I think we should start with the NBA, because probably one of the biggest things that happened last night was the emergence of Jason Tatum with a 60-point game, tying Larry Bird for the Celtics franchise record for the most points in a single game with 60, as the Celtics beat the Spurs in overtime, 143-140. This is Tatum's second game in, I believe they said, 3 weeks that he's had at least 50 points or more.
Yeah.
Could we finally, Lou, be seeing the emergence of the superstar, Jason Tatum?
Yeah, I think I have to say that. I mean, he has developed into quite a star for the league. That would be too far-fetched. I wish it was another team, but, you know, I always get credit where the credit's due, even though it's a team I don't really, you know, particularly like. And, of course, you really know that. But, you know, he has shown that he is, you know, up there, one of the best, and it's only getting better. So, yeah, we do have to give him credit for that.
Yeah, you know, I did find it kind of hilarious that earlier this season there were Celtics fans that were wanting to trade Tatum over Brown.
Right.
And then Tatum comes out and he has these two gigantic games that kind of makes you second guess what you might have said, or what it makes people second guess what they might have said about wanting to trade him. But, you know, his emergence is coming at a good time for the Celtics, obviously, with, you know, the playoffs coming around the corner. If he can continue to perform at this level or close to this level, right now they're on pace to play the Milwaukee Bucks in the first round.
Yes.
And the good news is they will, at this point, they will not have to go into the play-in tournament, which, by the way, I have an update when it comes to the play-in tournaments.
Uh-huh.
So the way it appears here, in the seventh, and obviously you'll have the seventh and eighth seed face off, and you'll have the ninth and tenth seed face off.
Yes.
If the winner of the seventh and eighth seed will immediately go on to face the number two seed. However, if you're the loser of that game, you're not officially out yet, as you will then go on. So say Charlotte loses to Miami. They will then have to face the winner of Indiana and Washington in order to determine who becomes the number eight seed. So technically it's two play-in games. If you're the ninth and tenth seed, then yeah, you're definitely going to have to play two games in order to get into the first round. But if you're the seventh seed, if you're the seventh or eighth seed, you'll have to play one in order to get in. Obviously, if you're the loser of that game, you'll have to play two. But That's what it looks like right now, according to the NBA playoff picture graphic that they have on NBA.com. The current seeds are as follows. The Eastern Conference, you got Brooklyn in the number one seed at 43-21. Right behind them, just a game behind, is Philadelphia at 42-21. In the number three seed, you have the Milwaukee Brewers. You got the Milwaukee Bucks at 39-24. You have in the fourth seed the New York Knicks at 35-28. Right now, they are. It almost seems like the Knicks are a lock to play the Atlanta Hawks, regardless of whether they're the fourth or the fifth seed. Now it basically just all depends on. It all depends on who's gonna get the majority of the home games in that series. But it almost seems like right now it's a lock that it's gonna be New York versus Atlanta in round one.
Yeah. Oh boy, I have colleagues in Atlanta. They'll love this.
And like I said, Atlanta in the number five seed. Oh, actually, no. It could potentially be New York and Boston, depending on what happens. Because Boston sits only one game behind Atlanta.
Right.
At 34-30. So I guess it all depends on what happens. Miami is at 34-30 in the number seven seed. But because of the win-loss, the season recap, basically, the season matchups, Boston has the advantage over Miami in that category. So Boston is in the number six seed instead of Miami. The number eight seed is Charlotte. The number nine seed is Indiana, and the number 10 seed is Washington as of right now in the Eastern Conference. The Western Conference, you got the Phoenix Suns taking over the number one seed from the Utah Jazz. Both Phoenix and Utah have the same records, but obviously because of head-to-head matchups, Phoenix has the advantage there. The Clippers with the number three seed at 43-21. You got Denver in the number four seed at 42-21. L.A. Lakers at 36-27 in the number five seed.
Yeah.
And Dallas right behind them at 35-27.
Well, with everything is out, I don't know what that's going to do.
Yeah, you know, it's right now they're currently trailing the Wizards barely by about 2 points off of a double-double by Luka Doncic right now. So...
Yeah,
you know, there's without Porzingis, that could pose a problem for the Mavericks in the long run. You know, one of the things to bring up here is LeBron James. Even though the return of LeBron James last night, that still wasn't enough. Kings. As the Kings won 110-106.
Yes.
And LeBron only had, wait a minute, I've got this. Oh, okay, no, he had 16 points. That's not bad for a first game back. 16 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists. Yeah, that's regular LeBron numbers. Anthony Davis, though, was the lead point guy last night, 22 points, 11 rebounds for the Lakers. But, you know, right now it does look like, though, that the Lakers are going to be it looks like they're probably secured in as the number five seed. And they're going to be either that or they could fall to number six where they would have a first-round matchup with the Clippers. But right now it looks like they're going to face the Denver Nuggets in the first round, which could pose a problem potentially. We could possibly have an early exit for LeBron this year.
Looks that way.
The number seven.
The Lakers have how they've been.
Yeah. The number seven seed belongs to the Portland Trail Blazers. They will, as of now, face the Memphis Grizzlies in the playoff tournament or the play-in tournament. The loser of that game will face the winner of Golden State and San Antonio. And San Antonio kind of got their standings are kind of screwed up now because of what should have been a win last night for them. They were leading the Celtics by 32 points at one point.
And they collapsed and died.
Comeback in modern basketball history, I believe, because I think the biggest one was in 2007 when the Kings came back from 35 down.
I think I remember that.
I believe that's what it was. I was trying to remember scrolling through Twitter last night as the game was going on. And actually, you know what? Jason Tatum got kind of, you know, I'm going to sound a little bit bitter because I'm a Celtics fan here, but he did kind of get screwed in trying to break the record of Larry Bird because he was going towards the hoop and he was technically in the windup of attempting to try and make a layup and they said that it was a foul before he took the shot. But there were different analysts who said that that should have been an and one. So technically, Tatum could have had 61 points last night. But, you know, that's kind of nitpicking there. But overall, Lou, what do you think of the NBA playoff picture here? You know, who do you think, as the season winds down, are probably going to be the favorites for each conference?
I'm going to say the Jazz for the West. And I'm going to say the Nets for the East.
You know, I can see the Jazz in the West. I can definitely see the Jazz, especially considering we have questioned them all season, you know, as to whether or not they could maintain the level of play that they were playing at, and they really have overachieved, if anything, with the roster that they have. You know, I would not rule out Phoenix, though, because Phoenix, I guess it was just the acquisition of Chris Paul has made them this much better. But, you know, Phoenix is a legitimate force in that Western Conference this year. And obviously, assuming if the Lakers can get it all together, you can't rule out the Lakers with them having LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Andre Drummond.
Is being injured.
True. Injury is probably playing a huge part.
No question.
In the Lakers record right now. And also another thing that could backfire on them is the fact that they don't have they lost Dwight Howard in free agency, they lost Rajon Rondo in free agency. Or actually, no, they lost Rondo, actually. Wait, yeah, in free agency. I forgot. Rondo, he got traded to the Clippers in a deadline deal with the Atlanta Hawks. So the Lakers, you know, they did lose quite a few key members of that roster, particularly off the bench. You know, and I think it could be a bigger hill to climb for the Lakers this year if they're hoping to defend their title.
Yeah.
For the East, assuming that they're all healthy, I would say it's probably going to be Brooklyn. I would say it's probably going to be Brooklyn if they can all stay healthy.
Okay.
However, though, I would not rule out Philadelphia because of what Doc Rivers has been able to do with Joel Embiid. The fact that he's been able to get Embiid to buy in to his game plan, and Embiid has just been performing at a monstrous level this year. Probably the best year he's had of his career so far.
Yes.
I mean, Rivers, he does a lot. He does good with younger players. So, you know, I wouldn't rule out the 76ers this year. I think this year could be the year that they finally make that jump into at least the conference finals. Knicks, I think the Knicks get by Atlanta in the first round. However, that means that they would have to face the winner of they would have to probably face Brooklyn in the second round, probably when they make their exit.
Yeah.
Although, actually, that depends though, because if Boston ends up winning, because of the number one seed, you know, you face whatever team is the lowest seed remaining. So,
right.
If Boston somehow upsets Milwaukee, or the number seven seed upsets Philadelphia, you know, Brooklyn won't necessarily be facing New York in the second round. So that obviously remains to be seen. I think this could be killer playoff rounds that we see here for the NBA this year. The NHL, here's where it gets interesting.
Yes.
NHL, we do have teams that have already clinched their spots. For the Discover Central, we have Carolina, Florida, and Tampa Bay all officially clinched into the playoffs. Carolina leading the division, might I add. In the Honda West division, you have Vegas, Colorado, and Minnesota locked in. Scotia North, you currently have only Toronto, with Edmonton and Winnipeg currently in the second and third spots, but Montreal is still in the discussion. The Mass Mutual East, you have Pittsburgh, Washington, and the Islanders all locked in, with Boston right on the outside. And I assume that if Boston is able to close things out, they're probably going to get in because they're only 1 point behind New York. And they're currently 8 points ahead of the Rangers. So assuming that they can close things out, they're probably going to get in. This is another thing too. Boston, ever since they acquired Taylor Hall, it seems like their second line has had a gigantic boost ever since.
Yeah, Morgan Saver the Devils.
Because Krejci has had, I think, 14 or 15 points ever since. He had three assists today. So he's had 14 or 15 points ever since Taylor Hall joined the roster. And that's probably the biggest issue he's always had, is not having a dependable wingman to play with. At least not since Marcus Johansson, or if you want to go further back, Milan Lucic.
Okay, I'll go further back.
From what it looks like right now, I don't know exactly what they're going to do in terms of actual matchups. But let me see.
Right.
How many – wait, how many playoff teams are there normally? There's normally, what, 16?
16. Yeah.
16 playoff teams. Okay, so if we want to go based out of the whole league, there are six spots remaining. If we're going based off of the rest of the league, you have Boston in the 11th spot. You have Edmonton in the 12th, the Rangers in the 13th, Nashville in the 14th, Winnipeg in the 15th, and Montreal in the 16th.
Yeah, but they're only going by division winners this year. Top four division make it.
If they're going by the top ones in the division automatically make it. Yeah, but there are wild card spots, so I don't know how they're actually going to do that. So
well,
if you
I
take
think
away,
the Islanders just clinched the last one.
Well, no, the Islanders are one of the three definites. Because there's three definite ones for each division. So there's 12 okay. definite teams, and then there's four wild card spots.
Well, yeah, but with the Islanders being the Rangers tonight, and I think their tragic number is now down just one. It's just down to one.
Yeah, they currently have a 1-point lead in the standings over the Boston Bruins.
Mm-hmm.
From what it looks like, which is what's kind of surprising, though, is Boston has a better win percentage, yet the Islanders are ahead of them, mainly due to points.
Yes.
But wait, how many games are there? 52?
56.
56. Okay. So
yes.
Boston has six games left. Ooh, okay, this is interesting. So assuming they do one wild card team per division, you have Boston ahead of the Rangers by eight points.
Yes.
And the Rangers only have four games left. So if the Rangers lose one of those next four games, the Rangers are eliminated. Unless the only way that they're not eliminated is if there's the possibility that there can be two wild card teams from the same division.
Mm.
Which, if that's the case, then they can potentially steal a spot from Montreal.
Okay.
As Montreal sits at 55 points right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on here as we go on down the line here for the NHL playoffs.
Right.
Real quick, Lou, did you happen to catch any of the UFC event that took place last week?
No, I did not, but I heard about the gruesome fight that only took 18 seconds after that pounding. Oh boy!
Oh, it wasn't just a pounding. Uriah Hall broke Chris Weidman's leg.
Yes.
And I saw the replay and the audience reaction. Not only did he break his leg, but it was a compound fracture. You're looking at the replay because you can see an actual slit open up on his leg. And now, basically, that's probably the end of Weidman's career. The rest of the card had some pretty impressive knockouts. Valentina Shevchenko, she defeated Jessica Andrade by knockout with elbows. Rose Namajunas beat Zhang Weilei by a head kick early on in the first round to win the strawweight title back. And Kamaru Usman shut up Jorge Masvidal with a knockout punch in the second round. overall, this was, you know, this was the first event that actually had fans of at least 15,000. From all indications, it did a pretty huge gate, 3.3 million for the gate. So it did have a disappointing buy rate, though, of only 700,000. And not just that, but tying a little bit of boxing into here, we had a confrontation between Jake Paul and Daniel Cormier. And Jake Paul pretty much is saying that Cormier is afraid to fight him, and stuff like that. And Colby Covington of the UFC has now insisted that Jake Paul's knockout of Ben Askren was a work. Basically, that Askren took a dive, basically, for $500,000, essentially. Now, Jake Paul, he has since declined Daniel Cormier's challenge of fighting Cormier in mixed martial arts, instead wanting to stay safe in the world of boxing, where as part of that Triller network or whatnot. You know, the more that I think of it, Lou, the more that I think that Jake Paul is never going to really be an actual boxer. That he's just going to knock out these fighters who, okay, maybe he knocks out some MMA fighters, but, you know, he's never going to actually fight a real boxer.
No, of course not.
Because, you know, I'd love to be proven wrong, but from all indications, it looks like he's kind of, it seems like he's kind of afraid. Because he got challenged. He actually got challenged by an MTV reality star who is a legitimate Gold Glove boxer because of his amateur boxing days. Gold Gloves, obviously, they go to the winner of amateur boxing tournaments. And the guy has two amateur boxing a two-time Gold Glove two-time Gold Glove boxer, and apparently he challenged Jake Paul to be his next opponent, to be the next opponent for Jake Paul, and it's been literally radio silence from Paul's side. Pretty much, what is it? It tells you that he's afraid to actually fight a real boxer.
Yeah.
And instead, he's going to be one of those guys that's going to hide behind, you know, fighting former former NBA players or fighting celebrities or something like that.
Right.
I mean, it's going to be kind of embarrassing for him. No, it's definitely embarrassing for us to watch. Yeah. I forgot about these two little tidbits here in the NHL. Jonas Korpisalo of the Columbus Blue Jackets will miss the final or the remainder of the season due to a lower body injury. This year he had a 9-13-7 record with a 3.30 goals against average and an 89.4 save percentage in 34 games. For the Columbus Blue Jackets. With him being sidelined, Elvis Merzlikins will be the primary goaltender for the rest of the year. Also, Vancouver Canucks fourth liner Jake Virtanen has been placed on indefinite leave while the Canucks investigate allegations of sexual misconduct against Jake Virtanen. a statement by the Canucks says, "We have become aware of the concerning allegations made about Jake Virtanen. Our organization does not accept sexual misconduct of any kind, and the claims as reported are being treated very seriously by us. We have engaged external expertise to assist in an independent investigation, and we have placed the player on leave as we await more information." And as of the time of that article, Virtanen has not commented on the allegations. And if anything, the stuff that he had put on his Twitter account, his Twitter has been deactivated. So it kind of sounds like to me that he's trying to hide something.
Yeah, it does sound like to me too.
That he's trying to shut everything down basically, and try to claim, you know, that nothing's really going on. That's what it kind of sounds like. Let's see here. In Major League Baseball, we do have some tidbits. The Cubs, they have designated right-handed reliever Brandon Workman for assignment. Justin Steele has been recalled from their alternate training site to take his place. He had signed a one-year, $1 million contract with the Cubs late this offseason. The contract came with about $2 million in incentives for the former Red Sox closer, but his stint with the Cubs looks to be over after just eight innings of work, surrendering six runs on a dozen hits, including two homers, along with seven walks and 11 strikeouts. He was clobbered last year for a 5.95 ERA in 19 and two-thirds frames between the Red Sox and the Phillies last year. So that's a huge step back for him. Seattle starting pitcher James Paxton has officially undergone Tommy John surgery. So he will miss the rest of this year as well as a significant portion of next year for the Mariners. Also undergoing Tommy John surgery was San Diego Padres left-hander Adrian Morjon. He'll miss the rest of this season and a sizable portion of next year as well. He last appeared for the Padres on April 11th after departing during the first inning with a left forearm strain. 22 years old, but still not good to have Tommy John surgery, but maybe perhaps
back from that. He's young.
Yeah, he'll be able to bounce back because of his age. Also, the Yankees, they have traded outfielder Mike Talkman to the San Francisco Giants for left-handed reliever Wandy Peralta, or Vandy Peralta. I don't know how they pronounce it. According to Jack Curry of Yes Network, New York will also receive a player to be named later in the deal. This sends Talkman back to the National League West, where the former 10th round pick played with the Rockies from 2017 to 2018. He was previously acquired by the Yankees for lefty Philip Deal shortly before the 2019 season. At first, he looked like a steal for the Yankees, appearing in 87 games as a reserve in his first year with the team, and batted 277 with 13 home runs and six steals over 296 plate appearances that year.
Yes.
However, things have fallen off, essentially. Peralta started his career in 2016 with the Reds, who lost him on waivers to the Giants late in the 2019 season. He has had trouble keeping runs off the board, though, as through 192 and two-thirds innings, including eight and a third this season, he has recorded a 4.72 ERA during his career. He does still have a minor league option remaining, though he'll only be eligible for arbitration one more time. Mm. However, he will give the Yankees a third southpaw relief option behind closer Aroldis Chapman and Lucas Lucci. As obviously the Yankees have had to go this season without Zach Britton, who's one of their primary lefties, who's on the mend from arthroscopic elbow surgery and probably won't return until the summer.
Right.
And also, I don't know if you've heard about this, Lou, but the Yankees are reportedly talking about potentially moving on from Aaron Judge.
Yes, I've heard.
And to me,
that kind of
seems a little too hasty, considering Judge is only 24 years old, or wait, no, he's 29 years old. He made his debut at 24 years old. He's 29 years old. He has 7 homers this year, batting .272. I mean, granted, he had a shortened season last year, only hitting 9 homers and 22 RBIs, but he was dealing with injuries too, I believe, last year, wasn't he?
Yes.
Despite playing in 28 games. I guess their big thing is he still has yet to play a full 162 major league season because of injuries. This is a guy who, when he was healthy, once hit 52 homers in a season in his second year. So I really don't understand why the Yankees are potentially toying with the idea of moving on from Judge. What do you think about this, Lou?
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. I mean, okay, so Judge has lost a step, but I don't think it's enough where they're going to, you know, have to move him on. I really think it's being blown out of proportions.
Yeah, I mean, he's still one of the focal points of that Yankee offense. You know, I really don't see any benefit from moving on from him.
No.
I mean, granted, the Yankees, you know, I'd say that the problem is more with pitching as opposed to hitting. Because they have scored 108 runs, which granted it is kind of low, but they have also they've given up 96, which actually is one of the lowest numbers I think in the league.
Close to it.
Well, maybe the problem is offense then. I don't know.
Yeah.
But as things stand in the AL East right now, the Boston Red Sox stand on top at 17-11. Then you have the Toronto Blue Jays at 13-12. The Baltimore Orioles are tied with the New York Yankees at 13-14, and you have the Tampa Bay Rays at 13-15. In the AL Central, you got the Kansas City Royals surprisingly leading the division at 16-9, a game and a half ahead of the Chicago White Sox at 15-11. You got the Cleveland Indians at 12-13, the Minnesota Twins at 9-16, and the Detroit Tigers at 8-20. In the AL West, you have the Oakland Athletics at 16-12. Then you have a tie for second place there with Houston and Seattle at 15-12. The LA Angels are at 500, 12-12. And you have the Texas Rangers at 12-16. In the NL East, good God, there's not even a single team in the NL East that actually has a winning record. The Philadelphia Phillies are at 13-14. The Washington Nationals are at 11-12, 10-11. And yet, surprisingly, all three of them are tied for the division lead.
That's right.
The only thing is. Yeah. That just shows you how bad the NL East is right now. The only thing that's keeping Philadelphia, the only thing that's keeping Philadelphia in the lead is their win percentage.
Uh-huh.
Atlanta, they're at 12-15, and Miami is at 11-15. In the NL Central, you got the Milwaukee Brewers in the lead at 16-10. You have St. Louis right behind them at 15-12. Cincinnati and Pittsburgh are tied at 12-14, and you have the Chicago Cubs at 12-15. In the NL West, you have San Francisco surprisingly ahead of the Dodgers by a half game at 16-10, followed by the Dodgers at 16-11. You have the San Diego Padres at 15-12, the Arizona Diamondbacks at 14-12. And the Colorado Rockies at 9-17. So right now, from what it looks like the NL West is probably the most I shouldn't say that. I would say the NL West, the NL and the AL West are probably the two most competitive divisions right now.
Yes.
I mean, Lou, doesn't it seem kind of odd looking at all of these records and just seeing how many losing records we're seeing out of different teams early on this season?
Yes, I've noticed that. But it's always been one division that's been incredibly weak, you know, until the last few weeks of the season. And, you know, coming off from last season where everything was all just out of whack, I don't know if I see, a division winner with a losing record this year. It's too soon to tell. But, you know, this division is just playing horrific baseball right now.
Yeah, with the NL East. The AL East, even though they have losing records, except Boston and Toronto by only one game for Toronto, despite having losing records, they're still incredibly close, though. You know, yeah. Baltimore and New York are at 13-14 apiece. Tampa's at 13-15. It almost seems like the AL East is probably, I wouldn't say the closest division because, Boston has at least a 2.5 game lead over Toronto right now. And then it goes to 3.5 and then 4. But it seems like this is the division that actually has the closest opportunity for a potential switch to where neither team is out of it.
Well, it's something to think about, but I don't see it happening.
You know, it's not like Minnesota, for example, who's 9-16, or Detroit, who's 8-20. There's no sort of trend that's saying, New York can't come back from 13-14, or Tampa Bay, even though they're in the cellar at 13-15.
Yes.
You know, that doesn't mean that they're not going to be able to come back up. But meanwhile, you have, you know, teams like Detroit at 8-20, who are 1-9 in their last 10 games. You got Colorado at 9-17. There are some teams that the way they're trending, you can tell that, you know, they're not really going to be much of a problem, basically. You know, this is obviously, it's still very early on in the baseball season this year. So the best part about this season is we're going to actually have a full season. So, you know, it's definitely going to be. Yeah, we hope at least. So it's definitely going to be a. It's definitely going to be an interesting season as the, I want to see, you know, the further we go into the season, just
yes.
exactly if these divisions actually stay on the track that they're on or if we see any shifting. We do have something here for the Cardinals. This might be bad. Right-hander Jordan Hicks left tonight's game due to what the team described as right arm tightness.
Uh-huh.
He began the seventh inning and allowed a hit over two-thirds of an inning before he left the game. He had a noticeable wince and flex of the arm after tossing his final pitch. The Cardinals' announcement had specified that he was removed for precautionary reasons, though that preliminary diagnosis of arm tightness is a cause for concern considering his history, as he underwent Tommy John surgery back in June of 2019, and he didn't pitch at all last year after opting out of the season due to COVID concerns. So, and the thing is, too, they haven't rushed him back at all by any stretch, limiting him to only middle relief outings and setup duty as opposed to save situations. But since his long layoff, it's been a mixed bag for him in the 10 innings that he has a 5.40 ERA this year that can be largely attributed to a tough outing against the Reds back on April 23rd. As his other 9 appearances, he has a 2.79 ERA. But to me, Lou, it says here he was experiencing soreness and inflammation in his – oh, boy. Yeah, this ain't good. Experiencing soreness and inflammation in his elbow, according to manager Mike Schilt. To me, that screams Tommy John.
Yeah.
Again. That's not good at all, especially considering his history.
Yes.
There's this thing that came out, and this is actually pretty interesting. The Pioneer League is reportedly testing a home run derby in place of extra innings.
Yeah.
You don't think it's a good idea?
I don't know what to think about. I mean, you know, I get the reason behind it. They don't want to wear out the pitching staff, whatnot. But you know how the baseball purists are going to be about this. They're going to be like, what the hell are you thinking? You know, I mean, we're doing our own thing now with runners on second base I actually like that idea. I don't know how it's really going to play out with the Pioneer League, trying to do a home run derby. Some might think that, you know, cheapens the game. Like, you know, you say that for all-star competition, not during a major league game. But I really don't see a problem with it. I mean, because, you know, who wants to sit through a 18-inning game that doesn't end about 2 a.m. in the morning? I mean, you know, today's generation doesn't even have that stamina anymore. You know, so
yeah, exactly.
I'm not necessarily ruling it out. But it may be a tough sell.
Yeah, and another thing that they detailed was some of the challenges that lengthy extra innings affairs present to an independent league, including the cost of keeping a park staffed and lit late into the night, the difficulty of teams finding professional quality players that are able to report to Montana, Idaho, and other less populated areas on short notice in order to lessen the toll on an overtaxed bullpen and stuff like that. So I guess they figure that having a home run derby in place will basically save them money and, you know, get them to end the game quicker. But here's a big downfall that I see of this. If you have a home run derby, depending on how they do it, are they going to have sort of like what they do with a shootout. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's a player
He gets five pitches. I don't think they're going to use the whole team because that would take further. They will use it five pitches, and if it's time for that, then I'll pick another player about that, like a sudden death type role. So I don't think you're going to see everybody up at bat.
Oh, okay, so it would be more like, they take a player to represent each team or something.
Correct.
Like that.
Yes.
Okay, so I guess maybe, but you also risk the possibility of wearing out that player, though, in the process. So I'm not entirely sure I like the idea of doing – I mean, home run derby, yeah, you know, it makes sense if you want to end games on time or a lot quicker than extra innings. But at the same time, you're risking the possibility of doing damage to the certain player that you use to represent you. Like, we've seen it that have happened in home run derbies before in Major League Baseball, you know, players that were on a tear before the All-Star game. This has just gone final. Luka Doncic and the Mavericks escape with the win at home against the Wizards, 125-124.
Just pipe in.
Talk about, they are now the number 5 seed in the West. The Lakers slide to number 6. Even though they're the same record, due to a tiebreaker, head-to-head matchups, the Mavericks are currently the number 5th seed now. But, when it comes to, like we've seen before in Major League Baseball, a player that may have been red hot beforehand, they sometimes lose their power for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
After participating in a home run derby. So you kind of risk that if you're going to do that in the Pioneer League and maybe potentially adopt it for Major League Baseball.
I don't think that'll ever happen in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so, but how do I put it? It's just you risk the possibility of potentially, missing out on extra power or extra home runs from those players later on in the season. I do have one bit here. We were talking about the standings in hockey. The Bruins do need just a point to get their playoff spot, given the Rangers, because of a tiebreaker, the Bruins hold the tiebreaker over the Rangers.
Yeah.
So the Bruins technically just need a point in order to clinch their playoff spot at this point. And a official scoring change from the Buffalo Sabres game against the Boston Bruins. Craig Smith's goal in the third period is now from David Krejci and Taylor Hall, as opposed to David Krejci and Charlie Coyle. That has just come over here. Let's see. Jeff Brittich has apparently stepped down as Rockies general manager. In a statement that was released by the Rockies, apparently both sides have mutually agreed that Brittich would step down from his duties with the club. They will appoint an interim general manager for the remainder of the season and will look for a full-time general manager after the season is over.
Yes.
Which kind of makes sense considering they're off to such a poor start this year that they've finally decided, I guess, that changes have to be made after
right.
God knows how many seasons of bad starts. Also, the Houston Astros have officially announced that they have signed Martin Maldonado to a one-year extension. He is guaranteed $5 million, along with a $5 million vesting option for the 2023 season as part of the extension for the longtime Astro Martin Maldonado. And speaking of extensions, no extension negotiations have been made at all between the Atlanta Braves and their star first baseman, Freddie Freeman.
Sure.
And from what it sounds like, there is a chance that this may be his final season with the Braves, as he is not signed beyond the season. And
well, there's time.
There is time, yes. They have not had any talks whatsoever. There have been no negotiations. As Freeman was asked about it on Tuesday, and he said there is no negotiations. He added that discussing a deal during the season would be a distraction, and I don't like distractions. My main focus is the game tonight, and I don't think there's going to be much talking anytime soon. So if he hits the free agent market this year, he's going to be one of the most sought after names just based off of what he has been able to do since the 2018 season. Since he signed that nine-figure deal previously, he has batted .294 with 245 homers in 6,036 plate appearances, and he has only missed four games dating back to the beginning of the 2018 season.
Mm.
And he's currently on pace for another tremendous year. Granted, he's only hit .233 so far, but he has had five homers with a 14-6 walk-to-strikeout ratio in 75 plate appearances. And it sounds like while his batting average is uncharacteristically low, data suggests that he will eventually soar closer to his lifetime mark of .339 as the season goes on. It's safe to say if Freddie Freeman ends up reaching the market, it's going to be he's going to have quite the paycheck headed his way. Also today we had the Kentucky Derby, which was
yes.
won by Medina Spirit.
Medina Spirit.
Medina Spirit is owned by Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert, and let me see. Actually, what were the odds for? Okay, yeah, it was a huge upset over Mandaloon and favorite Essential Quality, as Medina Spirit was. Hang on a minute. What was the – they're not saying what the – oh, Medina Spirit was plus 1,200 on the odds.
Sure.
Which basically – hang on. I want to see exactly what the – yeah, they were at 12-1 odds. Basically, the odds are the top three horses – had Essential Quality at 5-2, Rock Your World at 9-2, and Hot Rod Charlie at 5-1. Known Agenda and Highly Motivated were down to 10-1 with about 20 minutes until the post.
And they were not highly motivated.
Well, obviously, after how everything ended, Essential Quality was basically the favorite at 3-1.
Right up to the top.
So this was a pretty big upset, as just taking a look at the, I don't know exactly, you know, what you would have had to put down to win a certain amount, but, this was a pretty significant win, though, for anybody who picked them. In order of finish, you had Medina Spirit, followed by Mandaloon, then Hot Rod Charlie, then Essential Quality, O Besos, Midnight Bourbon, Keep Me in Mind, Helium, Known Agenda fell all the way to number 9, followed by Highly Motivated at 10. Sainthood in the 11th, Like the King in 12th, Been Strong in 15th, Superstock in 16th. The 5-1 odd Rock Your World finished in 17th.
Yeah.
Dynamic 1 in 18th, Soup and Sandwich in 19th, and King Fury was, I believe, scratched. They had 19 horses racing this year.
Well, one was scratched too.
Yeah, it says King Fury. King Fury was diagnosed with a fever, so he was that horse was scratched. Anyway, you know, I think we're probably gonna call it a little bit early tonight, obviously a lot of the discussion was done Thursday night and focused primarily on the NFL draft.
I see.
You know, there wasn't really that many topics for tonight. So we will be back next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly. Lou, thank you for joining me tonight.
My pleasure.
And plus, my voice is kind of getting a little low right now. So I think I'm gonna call it a night tonight. So thank you, Lou, for joining me. Anybody who is a member of who listens to these podcasts, if you want to hear more, you can subscribe to the Missy AE podcast on either blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE or by going to iTunes and subscribing by searching Missy AE on there. You'll get access to not just this podcast, but all of our other podcasts that we have done in the past, including the Survivor and Big Brother Memories podcasts that we've done. Let's see. What else did I want to mention before we go off here? As far as a potential podcast this upcoming week, as far as I know, I think we will probably be having one, but I'm going to have to double check with Jim on that. In all possibility, it sounds like it will probably be Thursday. But anyways, Lou, thank you for joining me. We will be back for Sports Whispers Weekly. We will be back next Thursday night, next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly. Everybody have a good rest of your weekend, and, we will see you guys next Saturday.
Good night, folks.
Good night, everybody.